You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Violent crimes in our country? They've got to be arrested and deported. That's the law.
Toomey pointed specifically to the case of a woman who was gunned down on a San Francisco pier earlier this year by an illegal immigrant. Toomey stresses that this issue isn't about immigration, but about stopping criminals. The Senate is set to vote on the Stop Sanctuary Policies Act on Tuesday. I'm Melody Burkett.
Here and online at USAHeadlineNews.com, this is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
Sprint is beginning to limit its heaviest data users. Correspondent Larry Olson has the report.
The nation's fourth largest wireless operator will slow down the connection speed once a user gets to 23 gigabytes in a month. The average user consumes about 3 gigs of data per month. The policy change comes as the carrier struggles to improve its service amid tough competition from rivals AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. Unlimited data customers with a double whammy as they also got hit with a $10 cost increase earlier this month.
A San Francisco-bound Southwest Airlines flight was forced to turn around after a man allegedly choked a woman for reclining her seat. Southwest says flight attendants quickly coordinated with pilots to get the plane back to Los Angeles after the flight last night. It's been described as a rapidly escalating situation between the two people who were not traveling together. One of the passengers was removed, while over 130 others were shifted to another plane. There are reports CIA Director John Brennan has been hacked by a stoner high school student. The New York Post is reporting a high school student claims to have hacked Brennan's private AOL email, accessing some private data on U.S. intelligence agents. The apparent hacker has not been identified, but he is being described as a teenager who smokes pot. The CIA is investigating the claims. Meantime, the Daily Mail is reporting on a Twitter account that is thought to be linked to the hacker and is posting links about Brennan's contact list. Hillary Clinton will testify before the Select Committee on Benghazi on Thursday in a hearing that's sure to have plenty of drama. She's already accused the committee of being an arm of the Republican Party. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
And the weather today is sunny with a high near 52. West winds 3 to 6 miles per hour. Tonight will be mostly clear with a low around 35 with calm winds. Tuesday is mostly sunny with a high near 67, southwest winds 5 to 14 miles an hour, and Tuesday night will be partly cloudy with a low around 44 with a light southwest wind. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 75. That's the temperature I like to hear. Calm winds becoming southwest 5 to 8 miles an hour in the morning, and Wednesday night partly cloudy with a low around 46. Welcome. This is the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we are very privileged today to have with us Reggie Carpenter. Reggie, are you there?
I am.
All right. Reggie is an award-winning performer. She has toured nationally and internationally. Reggie has done her solo shows in theaters, festivals, schools. Her writings and blogs about storytelling, ancestry, and identity have been published in various print and online publications. And Hunterdon County is very privileged to have Reggie this Wednesday at 7 p.m. in the Little Theater behind Hunterdon Regional High School on Junction Road in Flemington. And we are very privileged, Reggie, to have you on the show today. I know it was a little confusing and everybody was, you know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, you know, and I apologize for that. But, you know, it just one of those things. You have so many people involved in it. It just, you know, sometimes it gets messed up. But I'm very privileged to have you on. I really am. And I'm looking forward to Wednesday where I can meet you in person.
Well, thank you, Larry. It doesn't matter. We just keep our eye on the prize. Here we are talking now, so that's all that matters. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting you, too, and the other wonderful people in your community have reached out to me to bring me there to do my show, Snap.
Yep. would you tell us a little bit of the story behind Snap and how you came up with that name?
Well, Snap is based on a true experience of mine, a true story of mine when I was 16 years old. I had severe mental illness and tried to commit suicide several times, and I was eventually committed to a state mental institution for my junior year of high school. So I never meant to call it SNAP. It's just when I sat down to begin working on the piece, the word SNAP just kept coming to me over and over again, and just from the beginning, I just knew that that would be the title. And it was also a matter of me kind of snapping out of reality, and then as I began to get well, snapping back into reality. So SNAP seemed like the perfect title for that piece.
When you explain it that way, it sounds like it is, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, because like you said, you snap in to not reality and then snap back into reality. That makes sense, you know. It's just like it's unusual when people say, oh, well, you know, it's called SNAP, and you're trying to figure out what SNAP stands for, you know, like an acronym or something, you know. And, you know, at least I did anyway. I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, the only one that did, but, you know, when they said SNAP, and I'm going, well, let's see, what does SNAP stand for, you know. But anyway, the story of SNAP, is it relatable to people of all ages? Now, I want to clarify this. I have seen it, okay? So, I mean, I saw it twice. But I would like to, you know, have your opinion. Is it? What do you think? Is it relatable to all ages of people who may have mental health issues?
Well, I've only performed it for people 15 years old and up, so I don't know if children under that age would relate, but it has been received well by people of all ages, so I think so that it is relatable. What was your impression, Larry, when you saw it?
Well, I thought that it was very relatable. You know, I think that it... I think even if you do not yourself have a mental health issue, but like, you know, my wife and I, we have four children and our youngest has mental health issues, our youngest son. So relating it to that and, you know, the attempted suicides and the, you know, confinement to the hospital and, you know, that sort of thing, that all related well to us as a family. You know, so I think that people who have a mental health issue, I think it's always good to see people who have a mental health issue and gone through it and went on with their lives. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is going to be a performer like yourself or a writer like you, but there's a woman and I who have been doing presentations for, I want to say, almost 4 years now, monthly with, it's an organization called Educational Services Commission. And we always put a screen up of these famous people. And we could probably fill 10 rooms with all the names if we really got down to it. But we have two screens that we put up, and there's a couple names on there that always just I have to mention to the people that we're presenting the presentation to that just amaze me. One is Buzz Aldrin. Here's a man who walked on the moon, was an astronaut, and suffers from severe depression. Winston Churchill. He carried England on his back for 7 years, you know, during the Second World War. Suffered from mental health issues and major depression. And I always said, there was always usually maybe 10 to 15 people in the room where we're giving the talk. Thomas Jefferson. And I'd always say, he wouldn't run in this room because there's too many people. In fact, when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, I don't know how many people know this, but if you go to Philadelphia and do the, you know, Thomas Jefferson thing there, they will tell you that he would write maybe 2-3 pages, get a hold of Ben Franklin, give him the pages, and Franklin would go into the Continental Congress to present it. Franklin wouldn't go in there because there was too many people, because he had agoraphobia, I think it's called, something to that effect. And it's, you know, it's just interesting. But, and we tell people that, you know, you may never be president, you may not be an astronaut, you may not be prime minister of England or any other place, but you can go on with your life and you can lead a full, healthy, enjoyable life. You know, yeah, you've been struck with something that is, you know, nobody wants, but you can get through it with help, and, you know, you can go on with your life. And I think in your case, you're a walking example of that. You know, you are going on with your life. You are doing things with your life to help others. And I think that's awesome. I really do.
Thank you.
Now, you feel that the power from stories help heal the mind. You want to elaborate on that, please?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of applications of that statement. Just the process of telling a story, particularly about something that feels that it was sort of a shattering of the self, the process of putting together a story in a cohesive narrative helps the storyteller trace their own experience from one point to the next, to the next, to the next. So it's almost like having a jumbled up sentence of once upon a time being, you know, before the story, it could be time A, once upon, so that it's not making sense. But when we are able to sit down and trace, all right, what is the sequence of events? What was it that happened to me? Who was involved? Where was I? What age was I? Where was I and who I was with? Who was I with? Those things are all help to bring order to a jumbled mind. So that would be one of the first things that stories help heal within us. Just knowing our own story rather than something, oh, this happened to me, is this is what happened to me and this is how it happened. So we regain a sense of control when we tell our story, when we shape the story. And then stories are always about meaning. And when we're looking for the meaning within our own story, we're looking for how am I the hero in this story? what qualities did I display of courage and resolve and willingness to overcome something in the face of fear? So we begin to see ourselves in a different light rather than I am a victim of this experience to I am the hero of this experience. Then within that frame, we also begin to look to the people who were and are our helpers. So this story, which once felt out of our control, that we may have felt or still do feel powerless over, we begin to see that there were people in our lives who were trying to help us, and we are not powerless. We can choose how we respond to this experience. And then finally, in the sharing of that story, the teller and the listener become compassionately connected to understand that although the human experience is one that's kind of fragile, we're also indestructible when we share with one another our most human experiences. So that's how stories can heal both the storyteller and the listener and the community, by helping us become more compassionate towards one another, less judgmental, and more willing to discuss the parts of life that we often feel are too shameful to talk about.
Yeah. Never thinking about it in that tone, I can fully understand what you're saying. A lot of times, let's face it, every one of us, whether we have a mental health issue or not, we all have stories. Something that happened to us or something that, caused us to do things or not do things or whatever the case may be. And sometimes we don't want to talk about it. Divorce, bankruptcy, lost our job, things like that. And they happen to people every day. And yet, a lot of times, people bottle it up and they don't talk about it. And I understand what you're saying, because by talking about it, you're enlightening the audience or the person you're talking to, if it's one-on-one, and also yourself. Because you're allowing yourself to bring up something that may not have been a great experience or, something that you're not happy happened to you. Like, for example, being, having mental health issues. But you have progressed beyond that and are helping other people by telling your story. And in turn, helping yourself by telling your story, if I'm getting that correct.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Larry. Thank you.
And I think that people, in certain instances, like mental health issues, I think they have to help themselves a little bit. And yeah, they need help from others. Yes, they need help from the system and, so on and so forth. And sometimes it's not there and it hurts and, it takes them longer to recuperate, if you want to call it that. But I think, like with what you're doing, going around and either writing or talking and you're going to schools, which I think is very important. We belong to, I happen to be president of NAMI Hunterton, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And, we try to get into schools, and it's very difficult, and by you going into schools and telling your story, I think that is awesome. because, you know, statistics prove that, you know, 12 to 13 year olds is the onset of a lot of times mental health issues. And it's a proven fact. But so what are we talking about? Seventh and eighth graders, you know, and nobody talks about mental health issues in seventh and eighth grade, you know. They're talking about, oh, what you have to do in high school, you know, take your biology and your algebra and all this. But they're not talking about how you should address mental health issues. And I think that by you going into schools and talking to people and talking to students that, you know, you can help people and are helping people by doing that. So I commend you for that.
Thank you.
Now, you, what do you mean when you say have a witness? I need a little explanation for that because I didn't quite understand mm-hmm. what you meant by that.
Well, sure. So one of the greatest gifts we can give one another is to truly listen to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are listening deeply without judgment, we are validating the experience of the speaker. So when I say being a witness just means that I am being a deep listener for you, and I am simply witnessing you speaking what's true for you. So that's what I mean by being a witness. We witness without judgment, without necessarily commenting or feeling the need to fix or correct or redirect the speaker. We just witness what is true for them on that particular day. And oftentimes, as people speak aloud their experience, their understanding of the experience changes. And they'll get an insight into something that may have baffled them before. So being a witness allows the person to kind of hear themselves. Hmm. So that's what I mean by that, Mary.
Okay. And again, by unfortunately, not everybody that hears someone's story is non-judgmental, and that's a shame. And not everybody is cognizant of the fact that the person with a mental health issue didn't ask for it, you know, and they're doing their best they can to deal with it. And I think that a lot of times, well, that's unfortunately, that's why we have stigma, you know, with mental health issues, because, you know, pardon me, a lot of people don't understand what it is and, you know, make comments that are not non-judgmental. But if you find somebody that is non-judgmental, and there's a lot of people out there that are not, you know, that aren't judgmental, I think that's awesome, because that falls right into what you're saying about having a witness. Am I close?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. People judge mainly because they're afraid, you know, because we're very caught up in, well, this is a good thing and this is a bad thing, and if you have a happy life, then bad things shouldn't happen to you, and bad things happen because you are bad. And we know that these things aren't true. In my own experience, I do not have a chemical imbalance as many people do with mental illness. I didn't have that. I had a situational response to a very difficult situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I've come to understand through the healing of Saturn is that my response, which was to become depressed and suicidal, was a personal response. There were many other ways I could have responded.
Okay.
But that was the way that I responded because of my personality and my beliefs and fears at the time. But I'll also speak to my experience when I was a teenager was because my family system was in trouble. And as an adult, I came to see that my mental illness was expressing the illness in my family. And as I grew in maturity and understanding as an adult, I saw that my eventually getting well as a teen and being released from the hospital was also a way of seeing that my parents, too, were getting well, and they were really trying to help me. As a teenager, part of my mental illness was an expression of the illness within my family.
Okay.
For which I felt overwhelmed and powerless to make anything positive come mm-hmm. of that. So sometimes it's, sometimes it's situational and other times it's biochemical. And for me, it was a situational response to a desperate family situation.
Right, right. And, unfortunately, when, I know in our situation, like I said, we have four children, and our youngest son has schizophrenia. And when he first, went through his suicide attempts and wound up in a hospital for a little over 2.5 years, when it happened, we didn't know, where to turn, who to talk to, what to say. It was like we were just in total shock.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. And I think a lot of families, when I teach the family class for families who have someone in their family or loved one or next door neighbor or whoever who have a mental health issue, I always say that Dr. Spock didn't write a book about what to do if your loved one has mental health issues. He told you how to change a diaper, how to burp the kid, and all this other good stuff, but he never told you about who to call or who there's out there, what services are out there. And even today, there's so many people who don't know what to do when mental health issues strikes, whether it's because of a situation in the family or whether it's because of a chemical imbalance in their brain. They don't know, the family doesn't know what to do. And a lot of times, you hear that, get over it, get up, go get a job, that sort of thing. And it's not that the person doesn't want to, it's that they physically can't at that point in time. But, it's sad because, there's not a lot of knowledge about mental illness out there, even today. And it's come so far, than what it was. But it's still not far enough, and that's what we keep trying to do, educate the people, And I think that's what you're doing. In your way, you're educating the people and doing a good job of it, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I'm trying. Yeah. I really believe in the power of stories. And I know that telling this story has profoundly changed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I offer it to people as a way of expressing an experience that may seem very overwhelming, but also that they may not be able to speak about just yet or don't want to talk about.
Right.
So for me, I feel very, very grateful to actually have had the experience, and I also feel very grateful to be able to tell the story about it. Telling the story has changed me and changed me for the better.
Well, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. When you elaborate on the freedom one feels when you're sharing the darkest story and the hope that can be found when doing it, would you elaborate a little bit on that?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, shame lives in silence. And sometimes, you know, that old saying of, you know, the truth shall set you free, is that when we are able to tell the truth, then it really does set us free, that we're able to bear witness to the truth of what our experience is. And it, the thing that we're so afraid of, which is being rejected, when we tell that, we often are able to hear, "Oh, thank you for saying that, because that's happened to me too," or "That happened to someone I know," or "That happened and I've never been able to talk about it." So we begin to see that all these things that happened only to us and that we're so afraid of sharing, you know, 95% of people in that room have had an experience similar to that. And there's something very freeing about it, that place that we felt we had to be protective about, keep quiet about. We are able to see that, oh, this is a human experience, not just Reggie's experience, that all people feel at some time in their life very alone, very abandoned, very overwhelmed, very isolated, very afraid. And when we speak of those feelings lessen and we feel more in community, more connected, and less alone. So that's how we're set free when we tell our story.
That's interesting. I have to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll share something with you. You're listening to the 100 Medical Center Hour, and we're talking with Reggie Carpenter, who is an award-winning performer and has toured nationally and internationally. And we will be back in just a couple minutes.
Good evening. This is Dr. Mark and my pal Igor. We want to invite you to visit us at the haunted village of the Red Mill in Canton, New Jersey. Come by to have a cup of hot tea with me on October 9th, 10th, 16th, 17th, 23rd, and 24th. Tickets are on sale online at the redmillhauntedvillage.org. The prices are $30 for regular admission and $45 for express pass. Don't forget to scare up a coupon from our local merchants. We hope to have you soon.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Welcome back to the Hunterton Medical Center's Hour, compliments of the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce. And we have with us a very special guest today is Reggie Carpenter. And Reggie is a performer and an award-winning performer, I may add. And she has she does solo shows in theaters, festivals, schools. Her writings and blogs about storytelling, ancestry, and identity have been published in various print and online publications. And this Wednesday, Reggie will be here in Hunterton County, Wednesday the 21st at 7 o'clock in the Little Theater at Hunterton Central Regional High on Junction Road in Flemington. All are welcome. There is no fee. It's everything is, you know, free of charge. And it is well worth the time to come down and learn. Reggie, we were talking before the break about, you know, the freedom when you're sharing your dark stories and the hope can be found when doing so. Correct? That's what we were talking about, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, you get my age, you have to, you know, reinforce that because, you know, it's been like, you know, two minutes and I wasn't thinking, you know. But anyway, when my son was first hospitalized, and he was hospitalized for a little over 2.5 years continuously, I couldn't deal with it. And my way of dealing with it was not dealing with it. My wife would want to talk about it. I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd get in a car and go down to the truck stop and get coffee. You know, people would say, oh, how's the family? How's the kids? Ah, Paula's doing this. Scott's doing that. Sherry's doing that. Everybody's fine. I would never mention my youngest son. Finally, after, and this went on for almost 6 years, and my wife finally literally drugged me to an organization called Intensive Family Support Services. The lady there is long since retired, but she taught me how to deal with it. And by dealing with it, I then went and took the family-to-family class that NAMI provides. The teacher, who happens to be the lady who runs it in the state of New Jersey, says, you ought to teach. So I went to the training, and I've been teaching it for a little over 10 years now. So you do get, you know, hope when you open up. It took me 6 years to open up, but, you know, and it's just something that I would have done anything for my son. I mean, anything, you know, rob the bank, whatever, you know, if it would have helped him. But it was just one of those things I had real trouble dealing with, you know. But, you know, I can understand how when you do deal with it, it starts to brighten up a little bit. And, you know, there's more things that, more hope that can be found. And so I, you know, I fully understand what you're saying, you know. But, you know, it has to take a lot of courage to speak about, you know, the quote-unquote dark story, especially in public like you do. Was it very hard at first?
It was. The story Snap, which I'll be performing on Wednesday at 7, is a 1-hour-and-15-minute-long performance. But it didn't start that long. It started out as a 5-minute performance. I went to Boston to perform it. There's a very large and wonderful storytelling community there in Boston. And And it was sort of the first time I ever told the story in 5 minutes, and I just told a small portion of it. But I was tremendously frightened about telling the story in public. But I knew that if I didn't, I would remain traumatized by the story, by the experience. And I knew that telling the story would be beneficial. So I was very afraid of what people would think about me. I was very afraid. A lot of people didn't know anything like that had ever happened to me and were very surprised to hear about it. You know, it was a secret that I had kept for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So I was quite concerned about what people would think of me. And when I began to receive such positive feedback about it and response to it, I saw that my story really, by me telling this story, I was really able to help others tell theirs. So it became a lot less about me and more about other people. And it became a lot less frightening to me. And now I don't feel frightened of telling it. I feel like it's a service to other people, and I feel very grateful to have had the experience of understanding myself and the time that I lived in, and I really believe that it's a story of forgiveness and understanding. So I think the story is a big help to others. And I look forward to sharing it with other people now.
Yeah, it's interesting because with all that we do with NAMI and, you know, the two radio shows that I do here, the one just before this and this one, and I'm on the County Mental Health Board, people say to me, why do you do all this? You know, and I say, well, if I can help one family or one person, makes it all worthwhile. And I think that's the same thing with you and SNAP. You know, if you have a room full of people, you know, 200-300 people in an auditorium, and you help one person, makes it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that means a lot. You know, and I know that, well, let me ask you, going back, how long have you been doing SNAP?
Not all that long, but SNAP started as a 5-minute piece, and then that was in 2011, and then I started kind of workshopping it. And it became a 20-minute piece, and then a 25-minute piece, and then a 35-minute piece. And in 2013, I performed it at the International Storytelling Center down in Jonesboro as a 35-minute piece. And then in 2014, I expanded it to a 55-minute piece, and it was interesting because as I continued to work on it, I remembered more and more, and then the piece just got longer.
Right.
And then last October, a year ago, so 2014, I performed the full version at the National Storytelling Festival, again in Jonesboro, Tennessee, and so I've been. You know, it's been in various stages, but I feel like the story now is complete, as far as I know, anyway. So I would say I've been developing it took me from 2011 to 2014 to develop it, and then I've been telling it in the form that you'll hear on Wednesday night at 7 for about a year now.
Well, that's interesting. Obviously, you had to do research to describe the hospital, to accurately describe the hospital and the staff there. How did you do that?
Well, first I just sat with my memory, and then I had written away, because it was a state mental institution, I had access to my records, and I had written away to the hospital and received my records. And then I also went to visit the facility, which has closed down, but the buildings were still there. And then, quite by chance, while doing an internet search, I came upon the St. Lawrence Psychiatric Hospital. There was a site by people who had worked there to kind of commemorate the building and the grounds and the patients who had lived and died there. And I wrote away to them. They had put up a lot of photographs.
Okay.
And it was very interesting for me, because the way I had remembered things was true to how they actually looked. So that was really neat. And then I didn't get in touch with anyone who worked there or any of the other girls who were in the wards, partly because I didn't know people's last names. And eventually I had to settle on whose story am I telling. And, you know, I only have the right to tell my own story. And I thought that creatively it made it a stronger piece anyway to just stick with my personal narrative. So that was really how I recreated my experience. But mainly it was sitting down and really saying, okay, what happened? And then trying to recall as best I could from my own memory the experiences, and just writing everything down, not feeling the need to make sense or have things in linear order. But eventually the memories, I had enough so that I could go, oh, okay, this happened before that, and then that happened after this.
You could put it in order.
And by doing so, I was able to create a chronological order to my experience that I then went into my records and verified by reading that.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting. Why do you make it a one-woman show?
Well, that's what I do.
okay.
It was never really a question of anything else.
You never thought about having somebody else help you with it or anything?
Well, originally when I was writing the piece, I have a very dear friend who's a brilliant cellist, and we performed Snap. It was originally a piece with musical accompaniment.
Okay.
So she created a soundtrack, and that was just an amazing experience, because really writing and performing Snap was a monumental feat for me. And having that support and having the beauty of her music and just her person, she really, really, I don't think I could have done it without her. But we had been performing it. We had been going into high schools. We had been performing it for a variety of communities, college community, local communities, a number of high schools, individuals, classes. And then we both got really busy, and we were preparing to perform it again. And we went back, and she started to play. And it was just clear to us both that wasn't the story anymore, and that the story was complete on its own as a storytelling piece, and that the music had birthed the musicality of the spoken word piece. So we've never performed it again together.
Oh, that's very interesting, actually. You know, you know, and you're still friends, I hope, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Okay, as long as you're still friends, that's you know, that counts. You know.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, artists understand. It's not really about, you know, participating in creating art is about doing something greater than you. So it wasn't like it was anything personal.
Right, right. No, I was just, you know, I was just teasing a little bit there. Mm-hmm. You know.
Oh yeah, she's a very dear friend of mine.
Would you just tell us your view on why you think it's so important to bring awareness to the public about mental illness? I know I have a view about it, but I was just curious about what your view would be.
Your statistic there, I actually, 1 in 5, I think it's actually quite conservative.
Actually, it's 1 in 4 back, you know, they've updated it, but...
Yeah, well, I still think that's pretty conservative.
So do I.
Maybe one in four is a direct experience, but then we have tangential experiences of knowing someone, or it's someone in our family, or even an indirect and direct experience of mental illness. It's all around us, and there is no shame in that. The more we talk, the more we share, the more we know, and it's my belief that the reason that we're here is to grow in compassion towards one another, and the more that we can be open-hearted and understanding, the better the world will be. And there is no shame in having darkness in your life. These things happen, and they can feel unfortunate, but they're not the end of the world. They're just not.
That's true.
We have tools. We have choices. We have power over what we think and what we do. And when we tell stories, particularly stories of this ilk, we grow in strength and compassion towards ourselves and one another. And that really, so often we feel like, oh, I can't change the world. But you can, and it doesn't cost any money. All it takes is telling your story.
And you can do it one person at a time.
Yeah, it really is one person at a time. And it's valuable, and everyone's life is valuable.
And you know what you had said before, or just a few seconds ago, about... You know, you talk to people and all of a sudden, you know, they start saying, well, yeah, my aunt or my uncle or my brother or whatever. I was in a hospital down in Maryland, and Salisbury, Maryland, for about 10 days. And I was talking to one of the nurses. She was charge nurse, actually. And she asked me, you know, what I do. I said, well, I'm retired. I work, you know, I'm a lot of time with NAMI, blah, blah, blah. She said, oh, I know NAMI. She says, you know, my son, and she starts telling me about her son who she had to have out of her house because he threatened her physically and, you know, all this. And it's just, you know, so ironic that you're talking to somebody and all of a sudden, you know, they come up with, oh, yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're talking about something else and all of a sudden this comes up, you know. And it was just so, you know, a couple of the nurses was the same way, you know. We'd be talking about something and they'd say, well, what do you do back in Jersey? You know, blah, blah, blah. And then also, oh, yeah, I know all about that. You know, I had this happen or that happened, you know. And so I think the more we talk to people like what you do and what NAMI does, the more we get the word out. I think that's an awesome thing. You know, I really do.
Me too.
If someone wanted to reach out to you, how would they do that? Email or...
Oh, sure. They can always write me. I'm always happy to talk with people. I'd love to talk to them about their individual experience or any organizations that might be interested in bringing SNAP to their community. My email is Reggie, R-E-G-I, @ReggieCarpenter.com. And my website is www.reggiecarpenter.com.
And it's C-A-R-P-E-N-T-E-R, correct?
Yeah, so it's R-E-G-I-C-A-R-P-E-N-T-E-R.com.
Okay. Well, Reggie, I look forward to seeing you on Wednesday and meeting you in person.
Too. Me too.
And I'm sorry about the confusion here. Sorry about the confusion of the time and everything, but...
big deal. I am the prize, huh?
Yeah, and, so I would look forward to it, and my wife looks forward to it. Like I said, I just can't wait for Wednesday to come,
Well, I'm looking forward to being with you, and I hope we have a full auditorium. I hope we have people sitting in the aisle.
I hope so, too. Standing room only. I'd go for that, too. Well, Reggie,
take care of yourself, and thanks for what you're doing to help others.
And thank you, because what you're doing to help others is awesome. And I'll see you Wednesday.
All right.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the 100 Medical Center's Hour, compliments at 100 County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, and we will see you next week, same time, same station. And keep healthy, guys. See you next week.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. Donald Trump isn't letting up on Jeb Bush and his brother George W. Bush when it comes to the attacks on September 11th. However, fellow Republican candidate Lindsey Graham tells Fox News he agrees with what George W. Bush did.
President George W. Bush did the exact right thing in taking the Taliban down. So to me, it is beyond bizarre that after 9/11, you would leave the Taliban in place.
In an appearance this morning on Fox News' Fox and Friends, Trump said he thinks he could have done a better job preventing the attack. Trump added that if his immigration policies were in effect, he's not sure 9/11 would have ever happened. Trump and Bush have been trading jabs all weekend over the matter. A self-described high school stoner says he's hacked CIA director John Brennan. The New York Post is reporting a high school student claims to have hacked Brennan's private AOL email, accessing some private data on U.S. intelligence agents. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Welcome to Staples.
Hi, Staples guy. My office computers are running really slow. Do you?
Staples has the latest Windows 10 devices. They're lightning fast.
But I want
a great deal. With Staples Price Match Guarantee, you'll always get the lowest price.
Wow, and do you have plans?
No, actually, I'm free.
I meant tech service plans.
Yes, we do, and I'm still free.
With Staples Price Match Guarantee, you'll get more tech for less. Staples, make more happen.
Price match valid at checkout for items from retailers operating online in retail stores or products sold and shipped by Amazon. See store or staples.com for details.
Did you know the government is scheming to seize your retirement and bank accounts? Hi, David Fisher, CEO of Landmark Capital Gold Group. Get the facts in a white paper called How to Protect Your Retirement and Bank Accounts from Government Seizure. Transfer your 401k or IRA into physical gold and silver and take possession with no tax liability. Call Landmark Capital at 844-715-9411. That's 844-715-9411 or landmarkgold.com.
The government is moving to regulate certain recreational drones.
We're going to require operators of drones to register their aircraft
just like commercial drone operators do currently.
Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox says the government must be